This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to New York, from the Redwood Forest to Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night from 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our website at thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to live shows, to past shows, on our iPod Ready Archive section. That's www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. And if you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen live via satellite. Just go to the website for details. Our toll-free numbers, I'm going to put this number out immediately because I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of questions tonight, is 1-877-489-6350. And toll-free in the U.S. and Canada is 888-228-4494. I'll repeat those numbers for you, 877-489-6350, and toll-free for U.S. and Canada is 888-228-4494. We have a great guest with us this evening, a gentleman that I'm very proud to talk to. He is one of the founding members. Richard Gage is one of the founding members of Architects and Engineer for 9/11 Truth. He's been a practicing architect for 20 years, so I guess that gives him a little bit of credibility, but we'll go into some of the understanding of why he is considered expertise in some areas. And he became interested in the 9/11 World Trade Center high-rise collapses after hearing what he considered to be startling conclusions of a reluctant 9/11 researcher by the name of David Ray Griffin, who is also going to be on our show in the coming weeks. And then he began his own quest for 9/11 truth. Hello, David. Richard, how are you? I'm sorry, here I'm saying, hello, David.
Yep, you have to wait 2 weeks for him, and he's worth waiting.
I do. I do. Yes, how are you, Richard? Welcome to the show this evening.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm doing good.
Glad to hear it. Boy, we got a lot of questions for you, Richard. Can you just briefly, tell us the character and the makeup of Architects and Engineer for 9/11 Truth for those that are not, that may not be familiar with the program itself?
Sure. We have now almost 700 architects and engineers who have seen the evidence of the explosive controlled demolition of all three World Trade Center high-rises on 9/11 and have become extremely disturbed that they did not see this evidence, most all of it, in the NIST report, NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technologies, the FEMA report, the 9/11 Commission report. And when we show them this evidence, which is basically from the videos and the eyewitnesses that are in other forensic investigation that's been done, they end up agreeing with us, almost all of them. And most of them then sign our petition demanding a new investigation with subpoena power and an investigation with witnesses taken under testimony taken under oath. So this comprises our credibility, if you will, and it is growing rapidly. We expect to have 1,000 signatures by October when we will take them to Congress formally and ask for a new investigation. It's people sometimes cite that, well, look how many engineers and architects out there who believe the official story, like hundreds of thousands, right? But the problem is that every one of those almost end up agreeing with us after we show the evidence that we're going to be talking about today.
very interesting. Can I ask you, Richard, is there a particular criteria for becoming, considering being considered an expert in the field in architectural or engineering?
Well, we expect and qualify all of our petition signers by the fact that they have to have an architecture or engineering degree. Many of them, on top of that, have worked for years in offices, professional offices, as well as becoming licensed.
Very good. Now, let me ask you, how do you qualify as an expert in the field? Obviously, you do have a degree, and but you seem very expert in many of the areas in the film and the documentary that I watched.
Well, I'm a licensed architect. I've been licensed for over 20 years, and I have not been trained, nor has any other architect, really, and most all engineers, in explosive control demolition. This is not something that we do as a profession, we have done an awful lot of research to determine what are the characteristics of explosive control demolitions, and we simply compare those characteristics and contrast with the building number 7, the third skyscraper to be destroyed on 9/11 that was not hit by an airplane, a 47-story skyscraper called building number 7, which was a football field in length away from the Twin Towers. And so this is a classic example of a controlled explosive demolition. And we have no problem comparing that to other examples found in the United States and elsewhere.
Well, we have a lot of questions about the actual understanding of what happened, but, you know, I am going to go through a little bit of this kind of rounded in order for people to understand exactly how these things come about and what's going on. First of all, why is there such dissension in the architectural and community in the engineering field regarding the 9/11 event?
Well, we've been given an official story by FEMA and NIST, and originally the American Society of Civil Engineers Volunteers, that does not match the evidence. We've been told, for instance, that Building 7 collapses at free fall speed, free fall acceleration, getting faster and faster into its own footprint, a symmetrical, smooth, sudden, continuous collapse. And we've been told that this is due to normal office fires. Last November, the final report came out from NIST, and this makes no sense. When you look at the video, any architect, engineer, or other can readily see that this looked exactly like an explosive control demolition. In order for a building to collapse at free fall speed, free fall acceleration, it must have its columns be removed. And that can only be done forcibly, and that can only be done by explosives, on every floor, synchronistically timed floor by floor, and on a given floor within a tenth of a second of each other. Any deviation in that, and the building begins to tip over. So architects and engineers are clear on this, but the problem is they were not shown this building, the third worst structural failure in modern history. They were not shown this collapse after 9/11. They didn't even know about it. We just had a booth at the San Francisco Convention of the American Institute of Architects, of which I'm a member, and we showed hundreds of architects of this building, and they had no idea, most all of them, that this was a part of the destruction on 9/11. They had no idea a 47-story skyscraper collapsed into its own footprint. When they see it, that's why we have such dissension, because they immediately agree with us that this is a problem. And given all the other evidence underneath at the bottom of this building and the explosions heard by eyewitnesses, it all adds up to support the hypothesis of explosive control demolition, and none of it supports the hypothesis of the fire theory given to us in the final report by NIST.
But how does, you know, here we go, and then we go back to the same conclusion. How do they justify that? I mean, is it that easy just to put out a report that's obviously flawed, that's obviously inaccurate, and just say, well, these are our conclusions, and there you go?
Well, apparently it's that easy because we have experts, and we rely on experts, especially when we're dealing with something that's beyond the scope of our training. We tend to just let the experts tell us what happened. In addition, 9/11 was an intense psychological shock to all of us, and we had to suspend, really, our rational thinking mind, and we were in a state of fear. We didn't know when the next attack would happen or how many there were. It was unfolding in a disastrous way for all of us. And most of this information we didn't even know about, that has come out only in the last few years, the evidence found at the base of these towers. So we didn't have a lot of this evidence. So, yeah, it was fairly easy for NIST and other experts to roll out these fabricated documents with very little evidence backing them out, but volumes of material to drown the truth in.
Let me ask you, Richard, and I'm sure that you've heard this. Obviously, you know, you're considered by many to be a conspiracy theorist or anti-American. What do you say to people if they say that to you?
Well, I ask them to look at the evidence and then make their judgment. I thought the same thing when I first heard this information in March of 2006 on the radio from David Ray Griffin on KPFA radio. And I'm a Republican, right? I voted for Reagan twice. I'm for a strong defense, and
ooh,
this information was quite disturbing to me personally. So I had quite a turnaround, but I thought, oh man, this is conspiracy theory. I couldn't even believe it. But once I heard the evidence on the radio, checked it out that day at the Grand Lake, the next day, I think, at the Grand Lake Theater, and began to look at the work of Dr. Stephen Jones, a physicist formerly from Brigham Young University, who analyzed the dust and found within it the chemical evidence of thermite, which we're going to be talking about today. It all adds up to a very, obviously, a dark picture here, because if this is true, that these buildings were blown up, then we're not talking about Al-Qaeda anymore, because they didn't have access to the buildings or this high-tech form of nanothermite, which I'm looking forward to sharing with you.
Now, let me ask you, again, something on a personal level, Richard. Why is it so important for you to now to be continuously involved in the work that you're doing for 9/11 Truth?
Well, it turns out that we've been lied to about one of the most important events of the century, and I don't just mean little lies here and there. I mean the entire event was fabricated. If these are explosive controlled demolitions, and it's not Al Qaeda, then what is it, and why, and how why didn't we know about it? Why isn't there a journalist in the mainstream media reporting these easily verifiable facts and figures and scientific evidence found at the crime scene? It's a very large, much larger conspiracy than the official conspiracy story that we've been given. And I don't want to live in a lie. I don't want my son or his sons to grow up, or daughters, in a lie. I would rather speak the truth And I don't understand why there aren't thousands of architects and engineers doing the same, as well as journalists, politicians, and every other profession and person on the planet.
Well, you know, shortly after the 9/11 Commission report was released, the original investigation, there was an FBI. He was the head of the FBI, and actually, I had been trying to find his name so that I could ask you about him. After he stepped down from his position in the FBI in order to release a book that he had written about 9/11. And he was on our show, and honestly, I think it was this was the early part of our show when, and for some reason it's just gone. I don't know where it is, but anyway, the point being that when he came on our show, his statement, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, somewhat, but his statement was, "I cannot believe that in America there's not an outcry after this report was released." Would you happen to know who was the FBI agent head of the FBI during that period of time? Because you could help me out. I'm going crazy trying to remember who it was.
No, maybe one of our callers can. Robert Mueller is the current head of the FBI, I believe.
Right.
And his special agent in charge of counterterrorism reviewed our DVD, as you did, and noted that it has... extensively researched, and he made some other fine compliments, but we haven't heard back from him since.
He's still with us anymore. You know, when you hear about a conspiracy as grandiose and as huge as 9/11, you almost wonder what else could possibly be happening. You know, since you said that you had voted for Reagan, then you'll probably remember who Ray McGovern is. He was the Secretary of State and he presented President Reagan every day with his daily reports. And when I asked him what he thought about 9/11, whether he thought it was a conspiracy and a crime, or was it really an act of terror against our country, he said he didn't know who the perpetrators of 9/11 were, but all he knew is that not one government or security or military official took a fall for any failing in any area of the event. Not one person was even reprimanded.
This is true.
Now, he said, and I think he was alluding to the fact that seems awfully strange.
It is strange.
Yeah, I mean, somebody had to, you know, I would think that somebody mucked up somewhere and nobody took a fall for it, so obviously that was another one of the strange things. Now, let's get to, what is the vested interest of some of the individuals for the perpetration of 9/11?
Well, this was not my area of research. What we do is we look at the physical, forensic, science-based evidence found at the crime scene and seen and heard by witnesses, and that's what we report. We don't speculate as to who may have been responsible, how they got away with it. These are areas that other people have looked into, including David Ray Griffin, whom you're going to have on in a couple of weeks.
Let me ask you then. First of all, you know, before we got onto the air, I told you I had my own theories about what was happening. And this is something that I've always, you know, one of the greatest things was that everybody always says, well, how could you perpetrate something like that? Who would have the time? How could you get into the buildings? What kind of access in security would you have to have in order to implement all of this stuff? And to me, it's a very simple answer. The first attack on the trade towers, as far as I'm concerned, was the perfect opportunity. After in 1991, when they were attacked first, the towers were crawling with people who had not only had adequate time and ample opportunity for months. I mean, let's face it, if we're going to commit a crime of this magnitude, suffering more American deaths than in one act against our country, an aggressive act against our country, than at any other time in history. Don't you think it would have taken us a few years to come up with the plan? And why not during the first Trade Tower experience, when they were in there, when construction was in there and reconstruction, and then they were at the core of the heart of the beast, so to speak? That's what I think.
Yeah, well, it's a very complex operation. I agree with you. It would take many months, if not years, to put together. I completely agree with you. But I think what we ought to do is start to look at the evidence so that your listeners have a clue as to what it is that is disturbing the 700 architects so much as to demand a new investigation. And then maybe we can have some of them speculate and support, perhaps, of your theory.
Well, then why don't we ask you, what is disturbing you guys so deeply?
All right. Well, we start with Building 7, and I mentioned that NIST actually acknowledges that this building fell. Free fall acceleration, in other words, no resistance at all from the 40,000 tons of structural steel in the building designed to resist such a collapse, and with a safety factor of 3 to 5, it's 3 to 5 times stronger than it needs to be. And yet what happens, it begins this precipitous collapse straight down at free fall acceleration, as if you, fast as you dropped a brick off the top of this building. In the first 100 feet of its fall, it is free fall. That's 8 stories, and that is 2.5 seconds. After that, it only begins to slow down slightly. It is continuously still accelerating, even though the acceleration is not complete free fall. This is a direct violation of the laws of physics. If this building can't fall at free fall acceleration and crush any steel, much less 40,000 tons of structural steel. And what's happening is the building is giving up 400 structural steel connections per second in order to fall in this manner. That can't happen by normal office fires. That's what we're told. Normal office fires. Not damage from the North Tower, which it did have here and there damage, and not diesel fuel, which it did have in it, but it wasn't faulted as being a part of the problem of the weakening of steel. What we have instead is we're told by NIST that there's about 10 fires, and by our video and photo analysis, they're fairly small fires. And we have the elongation of beams. This is a new phenomenon called thermal expansion, NIST tells us, that pushed this girder off of its seat on this column 79, and then that causes a floor collapse, and then that causes successive floor collapses up to 9 stories, leaving column 79 unbraced, so it buckles. And then somehow this instability transfers laterally in seconds, and the entire building then comes down uniformly, as we talked about. They even try to model this on their computer simulations, and they can't get their computer simulations to model a straight-down symmetrical collapse. The top begins to fold in on itself. It does anything but what you see on our website, which is AE911truth.org, which stands for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. So that's AE911truth.org. And you'll see the building coming smoothly, symmetrically, straight down, free fall acceleration. And the computer models can't even duplicate that. In fact, their computer models begin to tip over, so they stop the computer models after just a couple of seconds to keep us from seeing what happens. Now, it is a mystery to me why architects and engineers are not in an uproar over this. Those on our site are, but I mean there should be hundreds and thousands of them. But the interesting thing is FEMA actually documents in the rubble, in the two, they saved only two pieces of steel, by the way. The steel was carted away at 400 truckloads a day because theoretically there were no people dead in this building. It was evacuated shortly after the towers came down, and it didn't collapse until 5:20 in the afternoon. And we don't see that many fires, by the way. But FEMA documents in their Appendix C in May of 2002 of the BPAT report, Building Performance Assessment Team report, and they document melting of steel, intergranular melting, rapid oxidation, hot sulfur corrosion attack, evaporation of the steel. Evaporation of steel doesn't even happen until like 4,000 or 5,000 degrees, but melting of steel doesn't happen until about 2,700 degrees Fahrenheit. But the problem is, and there's all of these first responders that see pools of molten iron down in the bottom of this building. But the fires, normal office fires, which we had, according to the official story, in this building, are only about 1,200 to 1,400 degrees at their hottest. So what melted all of this steel? Well, this is a huge mystery, and this is why the official, those supporting the official story, like John Gross of NIST, deny, in fact, that there's any molten metal, even though there's dozens of witnesses supporting it, photographs, videos. It's pretty blatant. And what we have in the previously molten steel, the chemical analysis done, in this case, by Stephen Jones, physicist, formerly from Brigham Young University, analyzes it, and he finds in the previously molten steel and slag from ends of beams and in the dust, he finds that it is molten iron. It is not molten steel at all. Very surprising. This is a whole other entity. It's got lots of manganese in it. It doesn't have chromium. So it's not a steel alloy. It's a new material. It's not used in buildings. It is the byproduct of thermite, a high-tech incendiary used to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. Molten iron is ejected from the chemical reaction of thermite. Thermite is composed of iron, aluminum, and manganese, and fluorine is found also. And these substances have no reason for being in an office fire at all, especially at these small particulate sizes that are found in the dust, all of the dust, ubiquitous throughout lower Manhattan. This dust has...
It was everywhere. It wasn't just in just the pieces that you examined, but it was everywhere.
The dust made it all the way across the river in New Jersey. It was 4 to 6 inches thick. It was incredible. You're right. And in all of these dust samples that Dr. Jones analyzed, he finds tiny spheres of molten iron, smaller than a human hair. This is extremely disturbing. I mean, they have no reason for being there other than in a very explosive event involving aluminothermic responses, reactions. These are, this produces molten iron. The iron oxide powder and the aluminum powder, the primary ingredients in thermite, produce after the reaction molten iron in an explosive environment are atomized molten aluminum, which turns into, by the surface tension of the liquid in a dispersed form, it turns itself into these small iron spheres, which have the chemical evidence, again, of aluminum, iron, oxygen, manganese.
Hey, let me ask you, Richard, for those of us that are not familiar, I mean, I am, because for years I've been looking at a lot of these sites and everything, and obviously I watched the video. But for those that are not particularly familiar with thermite, what does thermite do? What is it used for? And
well, the military
why is it possible to be in that building? Richard?
This land is yours.
Join us on the People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's the People Speak every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Are you appalled that our country is spending billions on war while cutting funds for our libraries, hospitals, and schools? Are you heartsick at the suffering of the Iraqi people? Then join me, Medea Benjamin, in signing Code Pink's urgent call for peace in Iraq. Sign on today at www.womensaynotowar.org.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to earthshare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
In our Constitution, the Founding Fathers laid a path to an economy that should have kept Americans free and prosperous. How we the people were tricked off that path into a world of debt and deception reads like one of the great mystery novels of all time. American Free Press compares author Ellen Brown's new book, Web of Debt, to an eye-opening thriller that will leave you feeling like Neo in The Matrix. In Web of Debt, the mysterious and often shocking origins of today's ultimate financial crisis are exposed. Starting with its distant beginnings to its present disastrous climax, as the reader is shown that the way to restore America's true wealth has been with us all along. Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, to see how America's money and future can become by and for the people once again.
Join the World March for Peace and Nonviolence, an international three-month event spanning seven continents and over 1 million participants. With endorsements from luminaries worldwide such as President Jimmy Carter, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The World March for Peace and Nonviolence seeks to bring attention to the need to end war and occupation, reduce arms spending, and all forms of violence. Please visit theworldmarch.org.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of the
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio, and our guest tonight is Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Thank you, Richard, for being with us. And just before our break, I had asked you a question about thermite. For those that have no idea what thermite is, what is it, what are its uses, and how did it get in the Twin Towers?
Well, thermite has been used by the military as an incendiary. It cuts through steel, so they use it on bridges. There's thermite grenades that destroy tanks and so forth. It hasn't been used historically on controlled demolitions. So there's the question of why it might have been used for the first time in the Twin Towers destruction. And one very likely cause, a reason, might be that it doesn't have the incredibly loud bang that high-energy explosives like C4 or RDX have, which are more traditionally used for explosive demolitions. Also, it doesn't have the huge, bright flash that is associated with high-energy explosives. But thermite is composed of about two-thirds iron oxide, which is basically rust, and aluminum powder. And uh, it there's a reaction between these two components, and there's other auxiliary components too, and it produces incredible quantities of bright yellow molten iron as its byproduct. And of course, this is found by the dozens of first responders. In fact, the World Trade Center structural engineer himself, Leslie Robertson, and his associate Richard Garlock find it. Peter Tully talks about it, the head of the cleanup operation. There's dozens of witnesses, and on our website you'll see lots of photos in the PowerPoint and the DVD.
And for those of you that have never been to the website, the PowerPoint presentation is particularly interesting. So please, I urge you to go and take a look for yourself. We are putting the website into the room for those of you that are here in our virtual auditorium. And for our guests, www.ae911truth.org.
And this DVD is also pretty well put together. It's 2 hours of information constantly backed with video and photographic evidence mm-hmm. and eyewitnesses. So it's very, very helpful, too. It can be purchased on our website for $20. And
it is wonderful. Just for those of you that have never seen it, it's amazing. Now, you know, I know you wanted to talk, Richard, about the towers and how they collapsed, how they fell. Please, feel free to just enlighten us. We need to know this information.
Well, while we have a straight-down, symmetrical, classic implosion in Building 7, the Twin Towers were quite different in their behavior because 95% of the material is being explosively ejected out of the sides of the Twin Towers. And we're talking about 4-ton, 20-ton perimeter wall units that land 600 feet away. In order for the physics of that to work out, they're leaving, they're ejecting instantly out of the sides of the Twin Towers at 50 to 70 miles per hour. And there's an incredible force providing that propulsion. Well, that force is also pulverizing in midair 90,000 tons of concrete, most of which is pulverized to a fine powder, like talcum powder, and this is the substance which is ubiquitous throughout lower Manhattan then.
Mm-hmm.
And in that dust, Dr. Jones finds not only these iron spheres that we talked about, but also hundreds and hundreds of samples of tiny chips of unignited nanothermite. These chips are a 16th of an inch long at their biggest. And they're red on one side, gray on the other. The red side is composed of the same combination of 2/3 iron oxide to 1/3 aluminum, but the particle size are 1,000 times smaller than a human hair. And this stuff is called nanothermite. It's 100 nanometers across. This is only developed in very sophisticated Defense Department laboratories. It's not made in a cave in Afghanistan. And this has been confirmed by several other scientists and is documented in a peer-reviewed paper in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal. So
unreacted.
The chips are... Go ahead.
No, unreacted nanothermite. So there's absolutely no... no way that this could have been done elsewhere, even if it wasn't done in a cave in Afghanistan? Or are there specific markers that for the types of products that are out there?
I don't know what other foreign countries might have access to this technology, but it is clearly very, very high tech, and it's only been produced in the last 10 years by Los Alamos Laboratory and Lawrence Livermore Laboratories. The thermite becomes not just an incendiary, but extremely explosive because these small particle sizes have a great surface area as a result, and the chemical reaction is instantaneous, making them more explosive, but without the large bang, of the C4 and RDX explosives, the high energy explosives. Mm-hmm. The other problem the architects have a huge problem with is the behavior of the top section of the North Tower, for instance. It begins a continuous, an immediate, sudden, and continuous descent at two-thirds of free-fall acceleration. That is nearly free-fall acceleration, straight down through the path of what was greatest resistance, the 80,000 tons of structural steel designed to resist any kind of a collapse. And yet it's accelerating faster and faster straight down through the 47 immense core columns grouped around the elevators in this building. So this is a huge problem just in terms of the physics of this collapse. But this 15-story section, which we're told was to drive the rest of the building straight down into the ground, it actually destroys itself in the first 3 or 4 seconds. It's completely gone. After that, there is no video or photo that shows any pile driver, if you will, driving the rest of the building down. The building is tearing itself apart and at almost free-fall acceleration, hurling these beams, as we mentioned, in symmetrically outside the footprint. We're looking for 110 floors in a gravitational collapse down at the bottom of this building. Guess how many we find? Each of these were an acre in size and composed of 90,000 tons of concrete and metal decking. 220 acres of metal decking. Not one floor is found in the photos of the pile in either of these buildings. All we have is a two-story pile of aluminum cladding, core columns, perimeter columns. There's no concrete. There's no floors. This is a complete non sequitur. In a pancaking collapse, we're looking for some pancakes down at the bottom. We don't find any. Tom Petrizzo, who brought many of these floor panels, 6,000 of them, out to the site in the 60s, couldn't find one of them when he came back to help the cleanup effort. We have explosive ejections in addition to this 20, 40, and even 60 stories down below this destruction, canopy of destruction up above. And we're told by NHTSA these are puffs of air, but they're pulverized building materials, and they're highly focalized, violent ejections that occur almost exactly between the midpoints of the facade, between the corners of the buildings. And there's 60 stories down below many of them. So how could these be pushed by that that pile driver, which we've already said doesn't even exist, down below? I mean, if there was a pushing of air down through the elevator hoistway, it would fill this open office planning space fairly uniformly with air pressure and maybe blow out several windows or none, but not these highly focalized, geometrically precise, violent, pinpoint accurate ejections that are obviously engineered.
Well, you know, what I found to be interesting when I was looking, especially in the PowerPoint, because I was able to, you know, take it back and forth and watch it, was that, you know, the original, the Twin Towers were collapsed from the top down. Tower 7 was collapsed from the bottom up, but they all, both fell in exactly the same way. How could that possibly be?
Well, they didn't fall in the same way. Building 7 was a classic implosion with very little destruction outside of its footprint. It had the post office next to it, which is a historic structure, and apparently they were trying to save it. The Twin Towers, on the other hand, were very explosive, where 95% of the material is blown outside the footprint in a very dynamic mushroom cloud, if you will.
So they did actually explode and not implode.
Yes, the towers were exploded. There was nothing found at the bottom of either tower in the way of floors. And most of the 95% of the debris is found, in fact, well beyond the boundaries of ground zero. The 1,200-foot equal symmetrical radius. There's no pile of debris. In fact, some people ask, how could you have gotten explosives inside the building? All those people, they would have known. But it turns out that the elevator hoistways are immediately adjacent to the core columns in the center of this building. And if you had access, therefore, to the elevator hoistways, you could have planted explosives. And you would have been making a lot of noise, but no one would have seen you. Well, what if you had an elevator modernization project going on the 9 months prior to 9/11? You could have planted all these explosives under the guise of such a project. In fact, we did have such a project. Ace Elevator had the contract. It was documented in the March of 2001 Elevator World magazine. And Ace Elevator had 85 employees, in fact, on the morning of 9/11, and they fled after the first plane impact. They were supposed to stay around and help the firefighters rescue all of these people. And it was really quite a scandal that was documented in USA Today.
Well, obviously, not a lot of people read it. We have some questions here, and I'd like to get to them if you don't mind, Richard, or friends and listeners are going to have my hide. Dan in Seattle, we've got a number of questions. So Dan in Seattle asked, President Obama recently asked us not to question the official story. Do you think that this will silence further investigation, and do you think he is now part of the cover-up?
Well, he's certainly talking like he is. I saw that report today as well. He says it's not open to debate. These are facts. And that's not true. It's very much open to debate. And the Al-Qaeda appears not to be responsible for this high-tech thermite and access to these highly secure buildings. Three of the most highly secure buildings outside the Pentagon, by the way. No, I don't think President Obama's declaration of his support for the official story will silence critics at all. We're quite disappointed because, on the other hand, it's President Obama at his inaugural address that said, we will restore science to its rightful place, acknowledging that the Bush administration had used science and manipulated science to their own ends. And this is clearly one of those ends and uses.
Hmm. Our next listener asks, Mike, and this is from Mike in California, do you want an independent investigation, and who would you want on this committee?
Well, it turns out that the New York City Coalition for Accountability Now, NYCCAN.org, is an effort that has already garnered 40,000 signatures, 45 I think by now, and on their way to 65,000 signatures demanding that the city have a new investigation, and that of the overall events of 9/11. And this is an incredibly important effort, and we support it completely. They do have some commissioners that have been appointed. William Pepper is on there. There are some other trusted people, people trusted by the millions in the 9/11 truth movement. And the question is, so this is a city-instituted investigation, which will have subpoena power, will be able to draw witnesses under oath. We are also bringing a petition to Congress. And by the way, they need support. I'm asking all of your listeners to support NYCCAN.org. It's extremely important. In addition, we have to and will ask for a congressional investigation, and I don't know how independent that can be. I mean, we have to be very concerned about a manipulation like we saw in the 9/11 Commission, which was headed by a Bush insider, Philip Zelikow, and had almost every Democrat and Republican on that commission had massive conflicts of interest with the defense industry, the media, banking industry, etc. We have to be careful.
We certainly do.
We may need an international investigation.
Well, I wish that the international community would step forward and really back your efforts.
In fact, they are. There's a 99 Truth group in every major city across the world, actually. Senator Fujita from Japan is leading a great group, political leaders for 9/11 Truth. He's speaking all around the world. In fact, he's bringing us to Japan to speak to 500 in Tokyo and Kyoto and six other cities.
Wonderful. We're going to be getting close to wrapping up. Let's see if we can get a couple more questions in here. Charles from New York asks, have you seen the History Channel special, which offers their government version of what happened with the Twin Towers, and have you challenged them?
I just had a distraction, Basima. I'm so sorry.
No problem. Charles of New York asks if you've seen the History Channel special, which offers the government version of what happened with the Twin Towers, and have you challenged them on that?
I don't know of a direct challenge to the History Channel by our organization. I know many have, and that's probably the reason we didn't. I don't remember the specific. I've seen PBS, I've seen National Geographic, I've seen the BBC, that's the most recent one, the History Channel is further back. But National Geographic has just interviewed David Ray Griffin, Stephen Jones, Kevin Ryan, myself, and others, Dylan Avery of Loose Change, in order to try to understand the 9/11 Truth Movement in a two-hour documentary, which they're going to air in August, and we're very excited to see that. They've also had some attempts to try to debunk the conspiracy theories, if you will. But I think we've got a lot of evidence out there, and I think it'll turn a lot of minds, actually, even though their intent was otherwise.
Great. Let me ask you, you know, I'm afraid that's all the questions we can take, although there are many more, but I would like to ask you one thing, Richard. Do you believe that we were not in as much danger then as we are now due to the events of 9/11 from outside entities such as Al-Qaeda?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that that we've created more terrorists than we had before 9/11 as a result of our action following 9/11 and the invasion of two countries in which we've already killed over a million people. I think that was perhaps part of the intent. That's what some people suggest. I haven't researched these things, but I'm obviously very concerned about our reputation in the world and it's sinking since.
Well, I hope that people will listen to the learned experts of your organization. That's AE. NYCCAN.org, and the Architects and Engineers 9/11Truthout.org. Please go. Please listen and please spread the word. Richard, it's been a pleasure having you. Thank you very much for being our guest tonight. We hope to have you back again one day because there's a million more questions we have to ask. But it's been a real pleasure. And folks, I just want you to know Betty Peltier, sister of Leonard Peltier, political prisoner for, probably about 30 years now, will be our guest next Tuesday night. So we're hoping that everybody will be with us again. Thank you again, and thank you, Richard, and have a great evening, everyone.
Thank you, Beth.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.